Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. This hour, reading and teaching people to read all over the world. Our first guest has a remarkable story. This is from an article about him written by Nicholas Kristof of the New York Times a little while ago. Story began for our guest the first half hour, John Wood, in 1998 when John, who was then a Microsoft marketing director, chanced upon a remote school in Nepal serving 450 children. Only one problem, it had no books to speak of. So Wood offered to help and eventually delivered a mountain of books by a caravan of donkeys. The local children were deliriously happy, Kristof writes, and Wood said he felt such exhilaration that he quit Microsoft and founded Room to Read in the year 2000. There is a huge need. Over 60 million primary school-age children around the world do not have access to education and most likely will never learn to read or write. This organization, Room to Read, currently works in Bangladesh, Cambodia, India, Laos, Nepal, South Africa, Sri Lanka, Tanzania, Vietnam, and Zambia, with plans to expand so they can bring educational opportunities and resources to children throughout the developing world. John Wood is with us, the first part of our program today, the founder and board co-chair of Room to Read, and later we'll be speaking with India McCants, who's executive director of Literacy Services of Wisconsin, based here in Milwaukee. Our phone number for you to join the conversation is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Hello, John. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Wow. Have you ever built a huge, wonderful organization all over the world, haven't you? Who would have thought you were going to do that?
Oh, I'm lucky. A lot of great people have joined on board. We've kind of formed, a caravan of people who have gotten very involved, and we're happy with how far we have come, but we're well aware of the fact that there's still a long, long ways to go in a world that has 780 million illiterate people in it.
780 million illiterate people. Wow.
Yeah, that's the UN statistic, and two-thirds of those are girls and women, and if you don't get girls and women educated, then nothing really changes. We have to make sure that every boy goes to school and gets literate, but also that every girl does too.
And I know that part of your program now is centering on girls finishing secondary school, isn't it?
It is. There's a really big problem in the developing world with girls not going to school. About 40% of girls in the poorest parts of the world don't go to school. And think about, how do you build a civil society if girls don't get educated? Because they're going to be obviously the future mothers. And even if you look at issues like overpopulation, a lot of it happens because girls drop out of school and might have five or six or seven children. And that's one of the reasons we have such overpopulation. And so I think with girls' education, you have this ripple effect that affects every other issue. It affects income. It affects family health. It impacts the number of children families have. And, of course, if you're a boy or you're a girl, chances are pretty strong you'd prefer your mother to be educated.
Mm-hmm. Now, Room to Read has a number of different areas that you're involved in. You do school libraries, you build schools, and you also publish children's books in the language that is familiar to the country in which you're operating, right? And you also train teachers.
Exactly. If you want to look at us in the simplest way, Room to Read really has two main pillars. One is literacy, and the other is gender equality in education. Those are the two kind of macro goals of the organization. And if you look at the publishing part of what we do, for example, one of the reasons we publish books in the mother tongue of all these languages is because the for-profit publishers don't have an incentive economically to go publish in languages spoken by poor people. So if you look at languages like Khmer, Nepalese, Vietnamese, Lao, Setswana, Zulu, Xhosa, you don't find a lot of children's books because the parents are poor. They're living on $1 a day or $2 a day. The for-profit publishers do not have an economic incentive. But if you think about this for a moment, this is where poverty starts, right? Imagine if kids in America didn't have books in the English language. I mean, today's literate generation starts with Dr. Seuss. So Room to Read has gone out and basically decided to become a publisher. We've now published over 850 original titles.
Goodness.
Using local authors and local artists.
Isn't that remarkable? Good for you.
Well, if people want to check the books out, even if people are in front of a browser, roomtoread.org is the website, and there's some great examples there of these local authors. And in my new book that I've just published, there's a chapter called Searching for Seuss, And it's all about our goals to go out to the developing world and say, hey, let's find the Dr. Seuss of Cambodia. Let's find the J.K. Rowling of South Africa and give them the opportunity to publish books in the mother tongue.
And have you found them?
We have, yes. We actually have found hundreds of them. We'll publish our 1,000th original title this year. I often joke that Rim Narita is the biggest children's publisher you've never heard of, because we're publishing in these more, you know, kind of obscure, overlooked languages. But we're excited about that, because if you can get literacy right, that really is the pillar, that is the foundation for education. And obviously education is the pillar for a stable society, for a prosperous society, for everybody in the world being good neighbors. So we think a lot of this just starts with getting to the 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds early in life and making sure that they can become literate.
Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that you're really hiring, you're finding local authors and talent, and you're hiring local teams to run your programs in country, aren't you?
We are. One of the favorite things I was able to do with this new book, which is called Creating Room to Read, A Story of Hope in the Battle for Global Literacy, in the book I talk a lot about those local country directors and how they are so passionate about helping their countries to develop through education. I tell the story of Khal Khan, our country director in Cambodia. He was an 8-year-old boy when the Khmer Rouge came into Phnom Penh, and his parents were killed on day one of the genocide.
Mm.
After hiding in the forest for 2 years, and just picture this as an 8-year-old boy hiding in the forest, eating whatever he can find, he eventually made it to a refugee camp, eventually got an education, and now is Rim Narita's country director for Cambodia. And he talks with me all the time about the fact that he thinks without education, there's no guarantee that this does not happen again. Chris Matupi, our country director in South Africa, I tell the story of Chris when he was a 10-year-old boy in South Africa as a black South African under apartheid. Do you know where he found his books?
No.
In people's dustbins.
Mm-hmm.
On Thursday night, he would walk through all the white neighborhoods where the trash bins were out, and he said to me, John, I could not believe that white people would throw away books, or they would throw away magazines. And he would stock himself up, and he became an autodidact. He became self-taught because he was able to find these books. And so now it's great because together, Chris and our team are opening hundreds of libraries across South Africa. And the theory is, hey, kids, there's a much better, much easier way to find books here in your Room to Read library.
I would think that you would be a big inspiration for students in American schools, too, who maybe don't have the kind of desire to read and attach the importance to books that students do who are finding the books for the first time.
We absolutely love linking up schools in the States with schools in the developing world for exactly that reason, Kathleen. We have a program called Students Helping Students. And, you know, it's just basically a chance for students to do good for the world, but also to recognize that we shouldn't take what we have for granted. I mean, yeah, no system's perfect.
Right.
There's always ways it can improve. But when I talk to 10-year-olds and 11-year-olds and 6-year-olds about what we do, they'll say things like, I had no idea kids that overseas didn't have books. I have no idea that kids overseas had to walk 10 miles to school. I had no idea little girls didn't get to go to school. And so through the Students Helping Students program, we're able to do good for the world while also, I think, doing good by letting kids here know, don't take your education for granted. I mean, one of my biggest heroes, and I know that there's a lot of Carnegie libraries throughout the state of Wisconsin, is Andrew Carnegie. He, in one master stroke, decided to open 2,500 libraries that have paid dividends generation after generation after generation for millions of people, and said will there be an economic reason not to go get books. If you're poor, you can still educate yourself through the Carnegie libraries. And in a certain sense, we're doing something very similar for the developing world by saying, let's help the poorest of the poor, but let's do it in a way that's a hand up, not a hand out. And I think ultimately education is exactly that. It is a hand up.
Well, I was referencing Christoph's article. I'm sure the number is much larger now. This was written in 2011, but he writes that Room to Read has opened 12,000 libraries. Update that for us, please, along with 1,500 schools.
Yes, we moved quickly. We're now up to 1,650 schools opened. And we're actually just this quarter have opened our 15,000th library. And I mentioned Carnegie. You know, we now have done a 6X on Carnegie. He opened 2,500 libraries. We've now opened 15,000, and I really feel like we're just getting started.
Yeah. Let's welcome phone calls for you. Here's how you can reach us. Some of you may be familiar with the program that we're talking about this hour, and here's our way for you to contact us, 800-486-8655. John Wood is the founder, really, and board co-chair of Room to Read, which is open libraries, as you just heard him say, all over the world, and 15,000 already, remarkable, along with 1,600 schools. They have two focuses: to get people to learn to read, to take on the problem of illiteracy in the world, and also to get girls to stay in school and to finish secondary school, and, of course, to read. He's the founder of this. He's a former Microsoft marketing executive. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. John, you mentioned those figures. In a very short period of time, you have created wonders all over the world. How have you been able to move this ahead so fast? Is it because you really have a great business head as well?
I think it helps to have business experience, because sometimes I think charities have a mindset of thinking very small, and given the fact that there's 780 million people in the world who are illiterate, I wanted to think big about this, you know, hire great teams, really motivate them to think big. I've often said that, you know, I think bold goals attract bold people, and so we have tried to think about it boldly. And, you know, it also helps to have written a couple of books. My first book, Leaving Microsoft to Change the World, published in 2006, became a manifesto for a lot of people who had traveled around the poorest parts of the world and said they wanted to do something, but they didn't want to do the typical handout. They wanted to help the developing world to help itself. And then the new book, Creating Room to Read, it just launched about 3 weeks ago, but already it's done extraordinarily well for us about getting the story out there and telling people, you know, let's not talk about the problems. Let's act on the solutions. And I think that's the key thing about Room to Read, is we're really action-oriented. Sometimes it drives me crazy to go to conferences where they're talking about charities are talking, is it's just problems and finger-pointing and all the excuses. And my mindset is very much what we call GSD, which I'll give the G-rated version of GSD, get stuff done. Like, let's not sit around and talk about the problem. Let's figure out a way to act. I'll give you one quick statistic, which I'm really proud of our local teams now, is that on average, Room to Read is opening a new library every 4 hours. We're opening six libraries a day on average now. So every day, at least 2,000 additional children are getting access to their first library. And the good news is, you know, how have we been able to do it? Part of the reason is it's not an expensive model of change, because the local communities are co-investing in every single project we do. So we don't go in with bulldozers and foreign work crews and build the school for the local people. Our teams will say, we want to work with the community, but the community has to be in a mindset of self-help. They'll dig the foundation. They'll carry the building supplies from the river up to their little mountain village. They'll come out and they'll pound nails. They'll saw logs. They'll paint the building. And in a certain sense, Room to Read is very much like an old-fashioned, if you remember, kind of like the Little House on the Prairie era of doing the barn raising.
Right.
The whole community comes out and co-invest in the project. That is exactly what we do. It's very much of a self-help model, and it means we only work with communities that are very motivated, because they have to put their own resources in. And I think the world needs more of that, right? Free is not valued. You want to only work with communities that are motivated. And what I've found in traveling throughout the world is that parents are the same everywhere. They want their kids to have a better life than they've had, and that almost always means education.
Sure does. Let's go to some callers. Lori in Ocotillo Falls. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I am a school librarian, and I am just amazed by what I'm hearing on this program. I was taught to read myself at the age of four by my mother, and I've been a voracious reader all my life. I know how important reading is, and I think that this is just an incredible thing that you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'll salute you, because I'm the product of a school library. I grew up in a small town in Pennsylvania, and we had a really well-run school library and a really well-run community library, and those were absolutely foundational for me. I talk in my new book about when I turned 8 years old, my parents bought me a bike for my birthday, and my dad said, this bike is literally a magic carpet that will take you every week to the library, and that's how you're going to get smarter, and that's how you're going to be a good, productive citizen. So I just am a huge fan of school libraries, and I feel so lucky that I had one. And I'm guessing that your students must feel, Lori, very lucky that they have you in their life.
Mm-hmm. Well. Thanks, Lori. Thanks for the call. More phone calls. Feel free to join our conversation, 800-486-8655. You can read about what we're talking about as well. John is the author of a couple books, most recently, just in the last couple weeks, released Creating Room to Read, A Story of Hope in the Battle for Global Literacy. And has he ever provided hope all over the world in many, many countries, teaching people how to read, establishing libraries, 15,000 of them in the past, say, 12 years, and 1,600 schools. Join the conversation if you'd like. We'd like to hear from you later in the hour. India McCants will join us, Executive Director of Literacy Services of Wisconsin. She is based in Milwaukee. And we'll talk with her about literacy needs at home. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. One thing that I don't think that I've asked you, John, and maybe people can help in this regard as well, is you must be in need of a whole lot of books. Aren't you?
We are. We've actually done, through this publishing venture that Room to Read is running now, the beautiful thing about it is by working with local authors and local artists who work very economically because money goes so far in the developing world, we've actually brought the print cost down to our local language books to a dollar. And so what happens a lot of times actually is we have schools that'll do coin drives. One student might raise $5 and say, hey, there's 5 more books for the kids in the developing world. Another kid might raise $100, publish 100 books. And we've done a lot of school fundraising in that way. And I think one of the things that's really nice about it is it does tie into the reading curriculum. So we even have schools that will do readathons to encourage, you know, their students to read more. You know, put down the iPhone, put down the iPad,
right,
turn off the Xbox,
mm-hmm,
pick up books and read. And so we do a lot of readathons through Room to Read with schools all over the United States and Canada. And if people do want to check that out, there is a Students Helping Students little microsite up on roomtoread.org. We welcome schools everywhere to get involved, and we welcome teachers everywhere to get involved with us. It's a great way, I think, also to tie in to the curriculum, geography, history.
Sure.
Kids will learn about apartheid in South Africa, but they'll learn not just about it, but they'll learn how much it impacted the children the most, because that generation was starved of education.
You must have so many "this has transformed my life" stories. Do you want to highlight a couple of them, John?
Well, the timing is good on your question, Kathleen. I actually received an email last night that just made me so happy. It was from a 17-year-old girl in Nepal. She actually learned to read in the first Room to Read library, that first little library I set up in 1999 in Bahundanda, Nepal. And she's now just finished grade 11. She's passed her exam. She's finished in the top tier. But what's great about this story is not just, you know, for me to think about this kid in a rural village in the middle of nowhere in the Himalayas is now, you know, in high school, preparing for college, but she's planning to go to medical school.
Oh.
To me, this just is like in one generation, in 12
mm-hmm
years, that's the impact
mm-hmm
we're able to make. And the question I often get is, you know, well, why do this work in the developing world? Don't we have needs here at home? And the answer, of course, is yes. If you're a fan of education, you have to be a fan of education everywhere. But I don't believe in demarcating, saying, well, gosh, we're going to do it only in a certain place. I think all lives are created equal, all children are created equal, and the beautiful thing about working where we work is that literally for $250 per girl per year, we can put a girl in school and help keep her in school. It's a very, very small amount of money, because funding just goes so far in the developing world where the local people are willing to put resources in.
Right.
And so as I look at, you know, this, you know, young girl in Nepal who's now in the city, she's studying, she's emailing me, she became literate in the first Room to Read library, and I'm personally committed to her that I'll help underwrite her medical school, because I just think it's going to be amazing when that first Room to Read library, you know, ends up terminating, well, here's your doctor.
I know. Oh, that's such a great story, John. Let's go to Harry in Madison. Hi, Harry.
Hi, good morning, Kathleen. Good
Hi.
Morning to your guests. My question is, what kind of opposition has he encountered, religious or political, and how does he overcome it?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's one I get often. Do we get a lot of resistance to our work? And the good news is, actually, what I've seen in 12 years of running Room to Read is I don't know what the word is for the opposite of resistance, but we have communities, literally hundreds of them, that are lining up that want to work with us. And even though we tell them, okay, you're going to have to donate land, you're going to have to dig the foundation, you're going to have to do the manual labor, and we tell the governments we're going to ask you or require you to provide the teachers and the librarians and pay their salaries. So even though we put those stipulations up there, you would think that might scare the communities off. But we have a waiting list as long as my arm of hundreds of villages that want to work with us. So we actually don't find that much resistance. There may be an occasional village here or there where that community doesn't come out and dig the foundation. And if that's the case, we'll say, okay, we'll walk away. We can go work elsewhere. There's other communities that want us. Because we do really believe that we want the communities to have skin in the game and to put in some sweat equity. But the reality is we don't really run into that much resistance. And, you know, if we had a larger budget, we would be doing a lot more than 15,000 libraries because there's just so many communities out there that want these.
Harry, thanks so much for your call. Greg is next in Lombard, Illinois. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Kathleen. I've got three, I hope, short questions, if I may.
Sure.
One, the books that are being placed in these libraries in the native tongue, as opposed to trying to enforce English all around the world.
Let's do these one at a time.
All right.
My brain can't often handle three things simultaneously. I also will tell you that my college roommate was from Lombard, Illinois, so I spent a little bit of time there on my winter breaks. But the 2/3 of the books we put into our libraries are actually in the mother tongue. Through our self-publishing initiative, we have published now over 850 original titles in over 20 languages. There are a lot of books in English, but that's not a quote-unquote forcing decision. The countries where we work all teach English as the second language, and so the governments actually request that we also have English language content in the library. But about 2/3 of the books we've put out into our libraries are in the mother tongue. And to give you the numbers, this is, you know, will shock you. We've actually put about 12 million books into circulation now, and over 8 million.
Goodness gracious!
Mother tongue.
Goodness. Carry on, Greg.
I hope I can be brief. Yeah, what I don't understand, and geez, I'm college educated. If this is going into little towns and whatever hamlets that are illiterate, how does a child learn to read a book if the child's illiterate? I mean, thank God I had school teachers and, you know, mothers that read to me. But how do they learn to read?
Yeah, no, that's actually not a bad question at all. That is a fantastic question. Room to Read works closely with the governments to make sure that we have trained teachers and trained librarians going into those schools and libraries. And then we work with them actually on literacy training. A very, very big pillar of what Room to Read's done in the last couple of years is layered in literacy training. We're working with the teachers, so if they're teaching children in Vietnamese or Khmer, Nepalese, all these languages that have never had a literacy curriculum before, we're working with the governments to create that so that we're actually working with those teachers. And that's one of the reasons I wrote this new book, Creating Room to Read, because we've evolved so much since the first book was published in 2006. And literacy is really one of those key things. And so a lot of times with these teachers, we're working with them to create very simple, very low-tech materials. I've watched kids play games like Run and Read, where they literally run between cricket wickets. When they get to the wicket, they pick a book up. They have to read a couple of pages and answer a comprehension question to prove that they actually understand what they're reading. And so literacy, habit of reading, reading comprehension are all things that we've focused on very much as Room to Read has evolved to the point of 15,000 libraries.
So what kind of help do you need?
Do we at Room to Read need?
Yes.
We just need advocates. I mean, we need people to go to our website and learn more about us. I certainly hope that people will read my new book because that really is a manifesto, the call to action for where we're going from here. We've already reached 7.5 million children across 10 countries, 10 very, very poor, resource-starved countries. But I'm thrilled with that number while simultaneously being not the least bit satisfied with it because that's really a drop in the ocean compared to what's needed. And the world today is so interconnected. I just think we need to make sure that that our neighbors are, you know, peaceful and stable and prosperous. And so I do hope people will get involved in Room to Read. Certainly, you know, certainly they can donate. Even a small amount of money goes a long way. And we also have a fundraising network where we have 57 cities where people have now started Room to Read fundraising chapters, and we have dozens of schools that have started Room to Read clubs. And so I do hope that, you know, I know NPR listeners are, you know, usually very well-educated and very action-oriented, and so I would just simply be honored if more of your listeners throughout Wisconsin, throughout Illinois, would get involved with us, and roomtoread.org is the place to learn more. And for those who want to meet me when I'm on book tour, I'm doing this insane, like, 150-day city book tour. The book website is www.creatingroomtoread.org, the name of the book.
Creatingroomtoread.org. Well, you're fully capable of doing anything. That's all I can say after listening to what you've done. John, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen. I appreciate it, and I hope you have a great day ahead.
Thanks. I'm sure we will. John Wood, author of Creating Room to Read, A Story of Hope in the Battle for Global Literacy, founder and board co-chair of Room to Read. He was a former Microsoft marketing executive who, while he was in Nepal, found this school that was way in the middle of nowhere. It had no books. It had 450 children and no books. So he decided that he would help. He found the books. He got donkeys to carry the books. And that's just the beginning of the story. Now, this Room to Read is, as you heard him say, functioning all over the world in third world countries, with 15,000 libraries having been created and 1,600 schools, plus books have been written in native tongue, and people who have written in the native tongue have had their books published. So it's just a remarkable, remarkable program. Again, that website, if you want more information about that, is roomtoread.org. Creating Room to Read, A Story of Hope in the Battle for Global Literacy is the name of his latest book. We continue talking about literacy and reading. India McCants is with us now. She is very active in the Milwaukee community as Executive Director of Literacy Services of Wisconsin, and she's doing many other things to make the world a better place. We're going to be talking about literacy in Wisconsin. How do we compare in Milwaukee to other places in Wisconsin? How does Wisconsin compare to other states in this country? Literacy services, what do they do for the community? How do we take on our literacy problem? And what it is people who love to read can do to help. We'll welcome phone calls for India as well. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and you can always go to our Facebook page, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Hello, India. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Well, that was just a remarkable story we heard from John. I'm wondering, what is the illiteracy rate in the state of Wisconsin? Are there more people here who can't read than we're aware of, India?
Well, there are more than we're aware of, but we certainly don't have it like some of the most resource-starved countries, as your former guest was just speaking of. I was so amazed about how, you know, bringing books on donkeys and doing those sorts of things.
I know.
And that's really amazing. I can say, though, that in the United States, for being, you know, the most industrialized country in the world or one of the richest countries in the world, to have the rates of literacy and the issues of reading that we do is really astonishing, Kathleen.
Mm.
Wisconsin is not one of the top, but I'll tell you, in Milwaukee, as you mentioned, we've got some real struggles. For children, we know that according to the WKCE scores, Wisconsin Knowledge Concept Education scores, there are only, in the Milwaukee area, 13% of kids reading at proficiency level.
Oh my goodness.
Third grade.
Ooh.
Only 13%. And proficiency, proficiency levels are defined in different ways, but there are, you know, four basic categories of literacy levels. There is minimal, basic, proficiency, and advanced. And when only 13% of our kids at that age have proficiency in reading, you know, we're in real trouble.
Why is it so low, India?
I think a host of issues and reasons. And, you know, I think we can talk about like cities, places like Cincinnati, Detroit, and others that have some of the same sorts of characteristics of poverty, unemployment, you know, racial isolation, a host of things. And do some comparisons there, but I, you know, I really like to, you know, shout out some of the good news. I'm privileged to get to work with a citywide collaboration called Milwaukee Succeeds. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but Milwaukee Succeeds has gathered around the table, you know, more than 100 organizations that are philanthropic, business, educational, community-based organizations, faith-based organizations. They're really coming together to establish a long-term plan for increasing literacy rights. And, you know, we've got the superintendent of MPS, Greg Thornton, Dr. Bonds, the head of the school board, both who are, you know, involved with this. It's not just the public schools. We're looking at the Milwaukee Succeeds sort of motto is every child from cradle to career. And so we would be working with kids in choice schools and charter schools, wherever the, you know, real serious lack of proficiency would be.
Mm-hmm. It's such a huge, I guess sometimes we think of it as a basic thing, reading, and yet I think about how it is just a crucial, crucial thing to do in our lives. In order to have a happy life, probably, it's good to be able to read and feel emotions, but it's also important to who you are and who you become in this country, that you have to read, and not have to read. It's a wonderful thing to be able to do, isn't it, India?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, Kathleen, my place at the table, or Literacy Services place at the table with Milwaukee Succeeds, is what we are doing is helping bring resources of our expertise, which is adult education.
Mm-hmm.
So while Milwaukee Succeeds is focused on kids, or at least, you know, cradle to career, that's really the emphasis right now. What we're bringing to the table are resources for what we think of as sort of the first and sometimes best teachers of their kids, which are their parents. And, you know, one of the things that I like to do around my organization, we're all one-on-one tutoring at Literacy Services. We provide adult basic education, GED preparation, English as a second language. We're located centrally downtown, and we serve lots and lots of underprivileged, socially disadvantaged folks. And what I try to do with the volunteers who are tutors is to establish with them from the very beginning kind of a shift in paradigm, Kathleen,
mm-hmm.
because I will say to folks, and I'll have you consider this, what would you have done? How would you have gotten to work today? How would you have, you know, functioned in a car this morning if you did not have the capacity to read?
Right.
It's sort of mind-boggling, and I'll tell you, you know, after almost 4 years in this organization, I still will ask our students, our adult students who are over 18 into their 70s, you know, how did you do it? And there are lots of tricks that will amaze you. You know, one of our students, whose name is Fred, you know, he runs an auto parts or an auto fix-it center in the central city. And I said, you know, Fred, how do you run a business without the ability to read? And he said, it's simple. He said, when somebody comes in to get their car fixed, I take the clipboard, I push it to their side of the counter, and I say, just fill out what you need done, and we'll call you.
Oh. And somebody else reads it.
Exactly.
And how can people get through? I've never understood this. How can people become adults in this society and not have learned how to read, India? How does that happen?
Well, you know, I can tell you this. In our reading program that, you know, served 300 people this year, all of it one-on-one, we have folks who have graduated from high school who cannot read. And I'm not suggesting that's from any particular school system at all, but I would suggest that there are lots of folks who have been pushed through. I mean, our students will say to us, you know, they kept moving me from grade to grade and they knew that I couldn't read.
Mm-hmm.
That people don't have a capacity to read at that age, people who don't, are folks who have likely experienced one of several things. One is dropping out of school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, we might make assumptions about why somebody drops out of school. Oftentimes people drop out of school for economic reasons, for, you know, kids to get jobs to support their families outside of school. Kids, young women in particular, who may be called to stay home and take care of their siblings while their parents go working. Kids that have felt, and I've talked to some of them, have felt in unsafe situations, you know, the gangs or other issues at their schools. You know, kids that dropped out of school for reasons that, you know, didn't do them a lot of good, you know, often return to us wanting to finish their GED or get those kinds of things.
Right. And how do you find all your volunteers? I guess the first question is it hard to teach someone how to read? And how do you find people willing to do so?
The way we find volunteers is we get on the Kathleen Dunn Show and we talk about how wonderful our organization is.
Okay, India, sign them up. Here's the phone number.
You knew I would, Kathleen.
Of course. Go ahead. Do it.
literacyservices.org is our website, and it is the easiest way to come through. You can always call the office at 414-344-5878. Our volunteers are really the lifeline of our organization. And as I like to say, I have 10 paid staff and 400 some unpaid staff. People come to us from a variety of sources. You know, there's a lot of word of mouth, Facebook, social media. We've been around for nearly 50 years, so people know us.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the great things was a couple years ago, we moved downtown to the corner of Michigan and Plankinton, a place that provides us with a great deal of visibility. And so volunteers, potential volunteers and students will see us and come near and be a part of the program. When a volunteer comes in, Kathleen, there's a sort of a pipeline that they go through. They make an inquiry to, you know, sort of see about it. We have them come to a one-hour orientation, which is really just to see if there's a fit.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're like me, you think to yourself, oh, I want to do this thing. I think this would be a good thing to give back with. And you get there, and we just want to make sure it's clear that everybody understands what it is they're looking for or they're asking for. And we really solidify a commitment. Then they do an observation, so they will come in and sit with a student and a tutor for one of our 90-minute class sessions. We have classes into the evening until 7 o'clock, which is convenient for people who work. And following that, they will go to training. So we don't want anybody who doesn't feel prepared, that we don't feel comfortable with, sitting down with a student until they're ready. And then following that, if they're ready, then we'll have them start tutoring on the floor.
Hmm.
Actually, it's not on the floor, but it's on the classroom.
In India, you must, as John told us, these stories of transforming lives. You must have so many stories of life transformations.
You know, your show isn't long enough for me to share some of those, but
I'm
I will share. There's a couple that really have always stuck out of my mind. There's a woman who is in her 60s whose name is Joan, and she's been working with her tutor, Linda, for a couple, 3 years. When Joan came in, she barely could read a stop sign. And after a year or two, one of the things that happens often is that our adult education students, the reading students, will bring in their mail and bring in other things that they can't read to their tutor once they've developed a connection with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so one day, Joan, who was working at Goodwill, brought in to her tutor, Linda. It was Linda's birthday, but Linda didn't know that Joan knew that. And so Joan said, I got a memo from my boss. And Linda reached across the table to read it to her. And she said, let me read it. And Joan pulled it back. And she read that memo to her boss, to her tutor. And the other thing about, that was astonishing, but the other thing about doing that was the memo said that she had gotten a promotion to now become a supervisor. Now, this is a woman who had no skill in reading, carried a great deal of shame without being able to read, and, you know, she's now running some meal sites for the Goodwill organization. We're very, very proud of her.
Oh, as well you should be. All right, we're going to welcome phone calls. Here is our phone number. India McCants is our guest this half hour. She's Executive Director of Literacy Services of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. And if the first half hour got you inspired to volunteer, India has only added to that desire. If you want more information about volunteering or their many programs, literacyservices.org is the place for you to go. Here's how you reach our conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we go to phone calls now for India, starting with Tammy in Kaukauna. Hi, Tammy.
Hello.
Hello.
I was just wondering whether or not the guest is familiar with the Little Free Library and if she has one in front of her house.
Oh, I absolutely love that. No, I don't have one, but I also do woodworking and carpentry. This is more than you need to know about me. So I am planning to build one for the spring. I know about them. I love them. And, I mean, what a great way for neighborhoods to have community. And the Little Free Library, of course, is small structures that look like little houses, which are lending structures for people to come bring books and take books in communities and neighborhoods. It's a fabulous kind of movement going on.
Sure is. You have so many talents, India. It's amazing.
Just the two, really.
No, you also are a great dog woman. I happen to know this. And I'm wondering, because you hear so much about dogs being used to help children learn to read. They feel comfortable reading with animals. Is that a part of what you're doing at all? Do you see more of that? Is it a good thing?
Well, you're putting me on the spot with my two dogs, Kathleen. You and I are Facebook friends.
We've seen
the boys. We are not utilizing at this point animals to assist us, but I am doing a little more reading about that these days. It's fascinating. It's fascinating what dogs can do. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks very much for your call, Tammy. Let's go to Lena in Milwaukee next. Hi, Lena.
Hi. I'm a non-violent felon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm no longer on probation or have any restrictions. And I know that when I was incarcerated, there was such a huge amount of people who could not read or write. And I'm wondering if you accept felons in your program.
I really appreciate the question. What I would say is this, that we do criminal background checks on everybody. Just because someone has a conviction on their record does not necessarily mean that we would prevent them from becoming a tutor. Violent convictions and those sorts of things would be very troubling, and we would not be able to accept someone who has had that in their past. But, you know, as long as somebody is clean about it, is able to talk about it, and it is a nonviolent one, I assume that there are some really great, wonderful people out there. I know there are wonderful people out there who have a conviction in their past, but it doesn't necessarily preclude you, depending on the crime.
Yeah. And, Lena, answer for me, when you asked yourself the question when you were in prison, why there were so many people who couldn't read and write, how did you answer that?
Could you repeat your question? I'm sorry.
Why do you think there were so many people in prison who couldn't read or write?
Well, I'm wondering if, you know, the chicken before the egg, you know, that people who aren't able to read resort to criminal activities in order to survive, or, you know, that lead them to not be in school, to not, you know, take the higher road. Because of their circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right, Lena. Sorry.
No, go ahead, India.
I was going to say that is what we find consistently, is that folks who do not have the ability to read, folks who may not have a high school diploma or really proficiency in adult basic education, can find themselves in situations where they are, you know, committing some criminal activity for economic reasons or other reasons. And what we love seeing, and I know this is happening in some parts of Wisconsin, we would love to have it happen more, is education within prisons and jails. So, you know, the smart thing is that if somebody can't read in a correctional institution, they will receive help with that, or potentially, this is another great thing, to get a GED while you're in prison or jail, and then be better prepared for the workforce when you get out.
Thank you very much, Lena, for your call. Do you teach people how to teach people to read? Is it a difficult thing? I know there are many different ways of teaching reading, India.
Yeah, there are. With our adult students, the sort of baseline foundational method is a phonics-based system. We use actually a research-based system known as the Wilson Reading System, which is phonics-based and also multisensory. You know, we have varying ways of learning. I'm a visual learner. If you put something on the board and I can see it, I'm going to get it better than if you say it to me.
Right.
The phonics system that we utilize has, it's got less letters and cards and boards and all sorts of things. And it helps with basic sounds, letters, word structures, digraphs into building words. It's a very sort of word structure kind of emphasis. But you realize that people are at, even people who read below a first grade level, and we are the only organization in the city that will take folks who are adults reading below the first grade level. These are the people who fall, you know, beneath the very wide cracks in our system. They're reading at various levels, and so a phonics-based system may work for them, and they may move on in our organization or in our program to something called the Voyager program, which is more whole language. So you learn to develop sounds and blend them and sound structure and word structure and then move into sentences. And we've got folks moving into the GED program following their time in the Voyager program.
Julian in Madison, hi.
Yes, is this Kathleen?
It is Julian, hi.
Yes, hello, Kathleen. It's a very interesting program. Hi.
Hi.
Why, I spent some time in New Orleans many years ago.
You want to turn that radio down, Julian, or it'll be confusing.
Oh.
Thank you.
Right, okay.
Okay.
You want to turn that radio down, Julian?
Yes, yes. Yes, I spent some time in New Orleans way before Katrina, and it was very astonishing to find out that many of the business people in New Orleans were illiterates from the early 1960s, and they were very shrewd business people, but yet they were not people of written education, but they knew how to take care of business. Now, as far as that goes, that was very interesting, you know, to find that out.
You're right about that.
I was listening when she said that there's an educational program in the penal system. I read a few years ago where they were abolishing the educational system in the penitentiary or the jail system, because many of the ones that were coming out were just committing crimes and going back in, and therefore the education that they were being given free to, they were not taking advantage of it, which I found to be a little bit of a lie, because many of those that did not want to return back did take advantage of that educational system.
Sure. India.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that, that particular reasoning. I can tell you that I know there have been cuts to funding for particular programs, but there's still educational programs going on in institutions. There's a federal grant called the Adult Education Family Literacy Grant that comes through the Wisconsin Tech College system that is funding programs in prison. But like anything else, I think there have been decreases in capacity because of money.
And thanks very much. And you said that you were aware of what was going on in New Orleans?
I was just going to mention, not exactly New Orleans, but it's funny because, you know, what do we say in society, Kathleen, about somebody who can't read? You know, I mean, let's be plain. We may think they're dumb or ignorant or whatever, all right? So the students that we work with at Literacy Services are folks who hold jobs, may have graduated high school, have families, are deacons in their churches, are, you know, pillars of their community. And these guys did this without the capacity to read. So I like to sum that up by saying, now who's dumb? You know, it is really amazing.
Yeah. And you also do work in computer literacy, financial literacy.
Yes, we do. In the last couple of years, we've added those components to our menu of services. The computer literacy in particular is something that we feel strongly about. It is a basic part of education. We do some workforce readiness skills, cover letter writing, resume writing, mock job interviews. One other thing I just have to say is that if you don't know it, in the year 2014, starting January 1st next year, the entire GED system is going to be computer-based nationally.
Really? So I didn't know that.
It is, and it's a little scary. Not necessarily because just of the computers, though there is a huge digital divide, but what we know is that for a person to get a GED in the state of Wisconsin, they have to pass five exams: reading, writing, math, science and social studies. By far, the one that's most difficult, all parties agree, is math.
Mm-hmm.
And so a person may have passed somewhere between one exam up to four exams. If they've not passed the fifth by 12/31 this year, they will have to start all over in 2014. So for us and other organizations doing GED preparation, it's really important this year. We're doing some targeted media around hoping to get some of these folks in. We know there are literally hundreds of people in Milwaukee that have passed one through four tests. Many people that have passed four and have not gotten the math.
Mm-hmm.
And starting next year, it's going to be more difficult. It is a more rigorous test that now will prepare folks better for the workforce.
Mm. Well, carry on, India. You're doing so much that's good. Thank you. Again, your organization, you need volunteers. LiteracyServices.org is the place to go, right?
That's right. It is. And Kathleen, thank you so much for giving all of us a voice.
Yeah, our pleasure. Our great pleasure. It's great for people to learn how to read, let me tell you. Life is good when you read. We need phrases. You know that. Tomorrow, actually, our book club, we're doing The Jungle, which got me off meat back in high school. Maybe it's going to have the same effect. It's part of our back-to-school book club. Thanks to India McCants for being with us and John Wood. And thanks to Amanda Magnus and Katie Madsen for producing this program.